This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
You smell that, Paul?
What's that?
I detect. Yep. I smell desperation. It's wafting up from Los Angeles. It's filling the nasal passages. It kind of burns. And you just realize that the Seattle Seahawks are seated at a table with one overwhelmingly aggressive opponent. That would be the San Francisco 49ers, who are currently in all-out push, all their chips around, absolutely throw caution to the wind mode. They are a storming band of marauders, and now you've got a Los Angeles team that is desperate.
They're very desperate, and you know, you see the move that the Rams made yesterday to bring in Jalen Ramsey, one of the most talented cornerbacks in the NFL, possibly one of the most temperamental cornerbacks in the NFL as well. And they're bringing in a really good player. They are better at the same time, but the problem for the Rams right now is they're better in the wrong spot defensively, not on offense, which I think is their biggest weakness right now. And on top of that, they gave up a lot of future capital to bring in this player, which is going to hurt their ability to fix their biggest problem, which, again, is the offense, not necessarily the defense.
He is a really good player. Jalen Ramsey's great. He fits what they do on defense. That's the one thing. Long-term, I think this is a great sign for the Seattle Seahawks. Long-term, I think that this is a sign that the team that you've been chasing in the division the past 2 years, not only have they fallen in the pecking order this year, but their general manager feels that they might be so compromised that he's making one of those decisions of, well, maybe this will work, and if it doesn't, I'm not going to be here to deal with the fallout. That's what giving up two first-round picks for what amounts to a season and a half of a player. And by the way, one of those seasons is at a franchise tag number, and Jalen Ramsey, who drove a Brinks truck to training camp this year, I don't think there's much doubt about what he's actually looking for when it comes to a contract. This is the classic. This is the Bill Bavasi trading for Eric Bedard type move, which is, well, I'm not sure if we're a player away, but if we're more than a player away, I'm probably not going to be here for very long anyway, so I might as well pull the trigger.
Oh, no, he's fine. He just wanted to get out of Jacksonville. He just wanted to get out of Jacksonville. He doesn't care about money.
Yeah, that's a big part of this, is you're trading for a guy to make happy. And I know that the line is, hey, they didn't sign him to a contract. You're not giving up two first-round picks for a season and a half of a guy.
That's true.
You're going to end up having to sign him, which, oh, by the way, that's another top-shelf contract you're going to give out. You've already signed Brandon Cooks to a pretty big deal. You signed Goff to an enormous deal. You've signed Gurley to an enormous deal. You've signed Donald to an enormous deal. And, oh, where are you going to get all your cost-effective labor? You don't have any first-round picks.
Right.
And you haven't. When was the last time they made a first-round pick?
The last time they made a first-round pick was 2016. Because in 2017, they traded their pick to Tennessee for Jared Goff. 2018, they made the swap with New England for Brandon Cooks. 2019, last year, they traded down. And then, of course, they're not going to have one next year or the year after. And, you know, you mentioned all those contracts that are on the book, Danny. Okay, well, Cooper Kupp is going to be on the last year of his rookie contract. Next year, he's going to be making a little bit over $1 million. He is well worth more than that. I would say in the $10 million per year range with the way that he has been playing over the last couple of seasons, and especially with the way that he bounced back from a torn ACL thus far this year.
That's the long-term picture. Short-term, the Rams did just get better, and they got a corner who fits the style of play. And maybe more than that, Seattle didn't get the corner. I don't think anybody believes that the Seahawks should have given up two first-round picks to get Jalen Ramsey.
I'd have thought about it, but with the way Shaquille Griffin has been playing, you don't have to.
That's probably right. I would say this, of all the different positions I would trade for if I was Seattle, cornerback is, if not last, close to last on the list.
What would be first? The
first is pass rusher. I don't think you can. You can't go wrong. That is pass rusher and left tackle. In my mind, outside of quarterback, are the most valuable positions in the league. And it's not that Jalen Ramsey wouldn't be good on Seattle. Seattle finds value in corners. Like, that is, if there is one efficiency that they have, is that they're able to get a higher level play for a lesser investment than any other team in the league. Justin Coleman, who looks really good right now, he played for 2 years on a minimum salary. They essentially stole him from New England. They have never drafted a cornerback higher than a third-round pick. They're starting a third-round pick in Shaquille Griffin and a fifth-round pick in Trey Flowers. They find guys to play corner, and then usually somebody else pays them more money, and they're able to find replacements. I would never, if I was the Seahawks, trade for a cornerback simply because I think that they're able to best find – that's the spot they're most able to find cost-effective solutions.
Right. It's not surprising either. That's where Pete Carroll's defensive coaching background really comes from in his time leading up to eventually being a head coach. There's a lot of his background where he was a defensive back coach. Things of that nature. I want to go back really quickly to the priority as far as who you would trade for though. If you're the Seahawks, pass rush over offensive line, pass rush on the same level as offensive line.
Yes.
Whatever the case, Danny, like that's an indictment on the pass rush for the Seahawks right now. You would be going after a first. You would be willing to give up a first round pick when you have Ziggy Ansah, when you got Jadeveon Clowney, and when you have Jerron Reed coming back this week.
You never can have enough pass rush. Pass rush is also, I think, usually one of the more transferable skills that if you're a good pass rusher, you should be able to. And even as I say that right now, Frank Clark hasn't exactly hit the ground running in Kansas City.
Not at all.
He's been essentially the equivalent of Jadeveon Clowney. So maybe that's, but I've always thought about it, man, offense can be so interconnected. It can be so, getting a guy in mid-season, to me, it's tough for that player to have an immediate impact. Even Dwayne Brown, who is about as professional and as capable, he got hurt when he got here. But the first half season he was here, you didn't really see the value, the benefit of that. I think there's a little bit of defense that you can get guys out there and just say run around and cause havoc, run around and let's get done. Like, come on, let's make some things happen. Jadeveon Clowney had been here a week, and he had a pretty big impact in that first game against Cincinnati. And in my mind, that's the one Pete did as much as he could to say, hey, Baker Mayfield got the ball out quick. They were able to. They haven't had a sack in 2 weeks. They've gone two straight games without a sack. That is troubling.
Right, and Jerron Reed definitely has to do something about it. And we got into this rabbit hole of a conversation because of Jalen Ramsey being traded to the Los Angeles Rams for not one, but two first-round picks. Two first-round picks for a corner, Danny. And, you know, this does make them better right now, but shouldn't they have been using these picks to do something offensively? I'm not sure what the answer would be because they have the receivers. They have, at running back right now, a very, I think, dangerous situation because what's going on with Todd Gurley going forward. But you don't give up a first-round pick to get a running back, especially mid-season, unless you're really desperate and unless you think that really you need somebody, anybody other than Gurley to be getting handoffs. But again, I don't know who you would necessarily get with that first-round pick. Offensive line, I feel like, would have been a smarter move here. And, you know, I'll just go to the offseason. A lot of people were going after Bill O'Brien and their lack of a general manager for trading two first-round picks for Laremy Tunsil, who is a promising tackle, but not by any means a Pro Bowl tackle.
Wait. I don't think that's the accurate description of him. Who's Laremy Tunsil? Gas Mask Bong Man.
Oh, okay.
He's Gas Mask Bong Man. He's a promising left tackle. Yes, he's Gas Mask Bong Man.
The Gas Mask Bong Man. Okay. Laremy smoked in a bong today.
Continue with your assessment of Laremy Tunsil.
Laremy Tunsil is a guy that they brought in, and they traded two first-round picks for him. And I think that the Texans are pretty happy with what they gave up for him, given that they have had a couple of weeks of offensive dominance this season against the Chargers, against the Falcons, which everyone is doing, and this past week against the Chiefs, which also everyone is doing. But I think they're happy with what they're getting out of a tackle. I think giving up two first-round picks for a tackle makes sense. I think giving up five first-round picks for an elite quarterback, if a team would be willing to take that on, would make sense as well. But in this situation, to trade the Rams two first-round picks for a cornerback, I need to go back and entirely reevaluate how I felt about Les Snead. I've always felt that he's a pretty good general manager. But
is that
now,
'cause he's really good-looking?
It might be. It might
is
be
that. Is it because he looks the part? He's like, he is a suave. He is straight out of casting call from draft day. He is able to come out there, and you feel like confident with that guy. And well, what do you know? He drafted Gurley, and they put McVay together. I think that this is a general manager that knows he's at the end of his rope. There are two types of trades that happen in the middle of the season. There is the team that needs to get rid of the player. That's honestly what happened with Dwayne Brown a year ago. is that the Texans were not going to keep him because he wasn't going to play, and whether that was McNair, I mean, from their perspective, they needed to get rid of the player. And so you end up getting, I don't know, a quarter on the dollar for him. When the Seahawks got Marshawn Lynch, that was a team that needed to get rid of the player. The other kind that happens is somebody gets blown away, and that's what this is. This is the Rams paying a premium to acquire a really good player who wants to get paid and did not want to be in Jacksonville anymore. There's a lot of room to talk about what this means for player movement, but for right now, from the Seahawks' end of things, they just realized that one of the people they're sitting at the table with is desperate, and when you're facing a desperate person, all you need to do is kind of hold on and wait for them to spend all their money. Desperation is the best thing you can be facing when you're sitting at a poker table, and we'll see exactly how that plays out. But I think this is, from the Seahawks' end, it's bad news that they didn't get Jalen Ramsey. It's great news because of what the Rams gave up to get him. Now it's time to find out what else to watch for, brought to you by the Dubin Law Group.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10, brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
First story with what to watch for. I'm sorry, I'm distracted by a large picture of Charlie Whitehurst that I sent to Jessamyn McIntyre this morning.
That was before I ate breakfast, and I have yet to eat breakfast.
Are you familiar with Charlie Whitehurst? Backup quarterback, a very good-looking fellow. He's currently Jules Roadie. There's a picture that I have of him seated on. It looks like he's got a single water ski next to him eating strawberries. But the first thing you need to watch for is another former Seahawk is coming back. Earl Thomas, returning to Seattle for the first time since he left the card in Arizona on a field and gave a one-finger salute to the Seattle Seahawks, clarifying later that was aimed at Coach Pete Carroll. I don't wish ill for Earl. I'll be interested to see how and hear how he handles it. I don't think he has many hard feelings toward the Seahawks either, but we'll see.
I'm very curious as to what he has left in the tank. Is he still a plus safety, or is he going back towards being average? Is age catching up to him? And I'm excited to hear from Michael Bumpus when he comes in a little bit later as to what he's thought of Earl Thomas with the Baltimore Ravens. He did have an interception in his first game, but it was against the Miami Dolphins. I don't know. I don't know what Earl Thomas is at this point in time. I will say the Seahawks probably felt pretty comfortable moving on from him, not just because of the personality things. I imagine they thought to themselves, you know what? The play is not the same that it used to be.
What to watch for.
This is an interesting story about another ex-Seattle Seahawk. The New England Patriots suspended Michael Bennett. Why? Well, here's what Michael Bennett told Jordan Schultz of ESPN on Friday.
Wait. Jordan Schultz is Howard's son. That's how he should be identified. Howard Schultz's son.
Howard Schultz's son, Jordan Schultz of ESPN, was told by Michael Bennett, quote, "On Friday, I had a philosophical disagreement with my position coach that has led to my suspension. I apologize to my teammates for any distraction this may have caused."
You should be fired and suspended.
that's Michael Bennett with expressing his opinion of Jim Moore's job performance. What do you think the philosophical disagreement was? He goes, "What is the meaning of the defensive tackle?"
Yeah, I wish it was something like that, but we all know it was. Why am I not playing?
Is there anything such as true free will? Like, what sort of philosophical discussions do you think they had?
Are we in a trip chamber?
Yeah. Is there a higher purpose to the defensive line stunt?
Hey, man, like, dude, what is a defensive line anyway? Are we really in a line?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm betting that the philosophical differences had something to do with where someone could put something. Like, I think that that's really probably what the philosophical differences were over. It's like, no, that doesn't sound very comfortable, what you're suggesting to me, Michael. I'm going to pass on that.
I think he's surprised that he is not playing. And I don't blame him, but they are loaded defensively. I mean, they let Trey Flowers walk, and they're totally fine in that front seven of theirs in New England. That defense has been amazing thus far.
Hey, you should be fired and suspended.
Does it tend to work out in New England when a guy is unhappy? Does the organization tend to accommodate that player and, like, really go out of their way to make sure that he's comfortable and happy?
Because usually not. This is weird that he's getting suspended. Normally, I think he would be cut. But I think they realize that Michael Bennett is very talented and that they could use as many pass rushers as they need for the stretch run.
which would involve the playoffs. I think that they are just keeping him on board for that time, and they might actually play him more during the playoffs because of his past playoff success.
Or maybe the philosophical discussion made some progress where the theory of relativity made it possible for them to see and respect each other's differences. I'm sure that's what happened.
Mind blown.
What to watch for.
And then there was one. Your Seattle Mariners, the only team in Major League Baseball, the only one of the 30 franchises never to have been to a World Series, the Washington Nationals. Nay, is that how you say it? I've always read it, like when you identify someone in their married name and then say nay, it's N-E apostrophe E, nay.
Nay.
Am I doing it right?
I don't know. Sure.
You're the French
one. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, thank you, because no, none of us do either.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Your age be showing.
Is that a thing? Like, you're talking about
not do
bay?
That anymore?
Like,
no.
BAE, maybe?
Oh, yeah, definitely a little bay going on.
No,
hey,
no,
bae.
No, no. It's not. It's none of, it's
wifey
none of the
poo.
Internet. It's none of the internet acronyms. The Washington Expos, who became the Montreal Expos, who became the Washington Nationals, currently wearing an Expos hat, representing
pour one
the
out.
Historical roots of that franchise. Is it weird that the baseball team with the most patriotic name, the Nationals, was outright stolen from another country? Maybe that's the most American thing.
It's
possible.
Very American. I mean, we finally got revenge for the French and Indian War against those French Canadians in Quebec.
Quebecois.
Uh-huh.
The Nationals make it. The Nationals are a monster, man. Their pitching is absolutely legit.
I would strongly consider picking them in a World Series against the Astros, who I think are going to ultimately win, or the New York Yankees, because that pitching is really, really good.
But not the bullpen. We should just clarify. Starting pitching, great. Nats, bullpen, the worst in the league.
Worst in the league.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, well, they come into the game doused
pretty
in
close.
Gasoline.
Worst in the National League for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, we can smell it.
Cardinals are taking advantage of that.
Says, the 719 says, Danny, be better. Just please be better. No, there will be no improvement. This is what you're going to get. Also, the 360 suggesting some philosophical questions. What is football? Are we football? Or is the football football?
Why isn't football called soccer and soccer called football, man?
Let's bring in the professor for the morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, what do you make of the Jalen Ramsey trade?
It looks like it's desperation time for the Rams. I think what they start to realize losing these last couple games is that window is getting so short. And right now they're sitting in third place. They have a running back who's being overpaid now because he's not equal to the $14.5 million because of the knee. The offensive line is almost in the state of having to be rebuilt. And so if you're going to win, you better win now. And so you make the move and try to go for it. But I think what you're seeing is that the beginning of the end of the Rams as a division leader.
Do teams around the league think that they've gotten better despite said desperation?
Well, on the field this year, yeah, because Marcus Peters has struggled. I mean, you saw him get beat for two touchdown passes in the game Thursday night, and he had trouble in that one play where Russell Wilson was coming at him, and he didn't know what to do and on that running touchdown. And so, you know he's a free agent after the season, so it's like, okay, I mean, Jalen Ramsey's a better cornerback. He's one of the best in football, but you gave up a lot to do it, two first-round picks and a four, and so they got better at cornerback on one spot, but where are they on the other spot? And I think what you can see is kind of the symptoms of the future problems that they have. I mean, you saw when they had Clay Matthews and Micah Kizer out. That's two linebackers down. All they had available were undrafted guys, seventh round pick from last year. I mean, they were really thin for quality. So they had to go for Danny Young, a guy that, they traded for yesterday in the Peters deal that was just being benched. Great athlete. I mean, they put great athletes on the field, but I think you're right now seeing that, in the future they're going to be thin. And remember, they've gotten rid of all their first-round picks. That's what, again, John Snyder does that, and it's smart to do because if you're going to be a playoff team, the first-round pick's really going to be a second-round pick. So you can survive that. But right now, they need volume. They got quality, but the volume's not going to be there for the future.
You mentioned Marcus Peters. He's traded to the Ravens, whom the Seahawks play this week. Is Peters going to be out there running around for Baltimore this week? Are they that desperate at corner?
They're desperate. I don't know if they're desperate enough to put him on the field in the first week. Because remember, that's a more complicated defense. You heard that from Earl Thomas when he got there. And so, you know, Peters has to see where he is. And they have enough bodies right now to be able to line up, particularly if they can get Jimmy Smith back. I mean, it's an upgrade because, you know, they've Carr, their other cornerback, Brandon Carr, is getting older and he's lost a little bit of speed. And, you know, Jimmy Smith, their best cornerback, has been hurt now for several weeks with a knee injury. So it's a move that he may play this week. He may not, but I don't think they can throw them all out there for the entire game.
How has Earl Thomas, the Baltimore Raven, played?
Okay. I mean, not great. I think that you can see there's an adjustment issue that he has going into the defense because it is different from what he had here in Seattle. And, you know, at times, you know, he's gambled a little bit that, you know, has led to some plays they've given up. I mean, you know, adding him to the secondary was smart because he's a, you know, still a great player. Again, some of the range is not there as it was before, but, you know, he helps them out. But that's the surprising part because here they add Earl Thomas and their secondary really has been disappointing. So it's not Earl. It's really been the players around him, and that was supposed to be the strength of the team.
From what you've heard, have things smoothed over after he did not chase down Nick Chubb on that long touchdown against the Cleveland Browns? Because it felt like the locker room maybe wasn't thrilled with his effort on that play.
Well, of course, I mean, it didn't help that he went into with the training room and saw Brandon Williams, a defensive tackle, who's really one of their best players, if not their best player on defense, and called him out for not being on the field with that knee injury. He was surprised about that, and they got into an altercation. So, you know, the one thing I think you can see with Earl, you know, one thing could lead to they can patch that up, and I think they patch that individual problem up. But, you know, the way as intense as Earl is, there's going to be sometimes some other issues in the locker room.
John, with Earl Thomas leaving, I'm surprised in some cases that the Seahawks let him go. But then I look at how things have panned out. They've usually made the right call on guys, and usually when they've left, they haven't panned out as well elsewhere. Michael Bennett's remained a productive player, but he's now on his third team in three seasons. The Eagles haven't let him go. They traded him to the Patriots. Now he's suspended for the week in New England. Do you think he's starting to reach the end of the road?
I think so, yeah. Because, I mean, you think about the fact that, you know, the Eagles are always good in trying to pick up as many pass rushers and as many defensive playmakers as they can. And they ended up trading him for, you know, minimal change as far as the draft choice. Now he goes to New England, and he's only playing at different times 11% of the time. And I think that's a telling thing because they picked him up particularly to be, you know, a specialty type player, a pass rusher, and, you know, a defensive end that can play defensive tackle when necessary. And so when he gets into it with one of the coaches about not playing and they suspend him, I think you're seeing pretty much the beginning of the end.
There was a really bizarre story. It came after Sunday Night Football where the Chargers were very much outnumbered by Steeler fans in attendance that Taylor Twellman put out, and I don't know how much stock to put into this, but I figured, John, you would have some insight on this. There was a strong rumor per Twellman around in recent weeks that the NFL had offered the city of St. Louis the Chargers franchise. Have you heard anything to corroborate that?
No, I would have to think that's not correct because, again, the NFL is not in charge of the team. It's the Spanos family is in charge of the Chargers. So, no, I can't see that happening at all because, again, it's the Chargers aren't the NFL to ponder. I mean, you know, they still make money, and so it's not like they can overtake the team and do all that stuff. So, and at the moment, I mean, St. Louis still has a lawsuit going against the Rams and all that they're still trying to settle and do all that. So, no, I can't see that one being valid.
The Chargers have a problem, though, man. Nobody in L.A. seems to want them. No. And they're going to be in the new stadium, and I guess maybe they need that to make some of the economics work. But it seems like they don't have a fan base. Their franchise is cursed this year with injuries. They've actually been fairly successful. But really, of all the different businesses, you can understand why Washington fans have bailed on that franchise because of the way Dan Snyder's run it. But man, the Chargers, they've been a more successful franchise and have basically no showing to follow.
Well, think about this is that they won 12 games last year. They have Phillip Rivers at quarterback. You know, they have a good defense, and yet the Steeler fans had about 80% of the tickets according to Al Michaels as far as being in the stadium. And even they played Renegade, the Steelers fight song in the fourth quarter on a road game in that. So I think you know, there's no question. Already when they this is probably going to be outdated, but when they did their revenue projection numbers, they had to take the revenue projection numbers for the Chargers in the new stadium down by $150 million. They're having trouble selling the PSLs. They're having trouble selling the tickets. And now I think you can imagine once they move into the new stadium, a lot of tickets are going to be available for a lot of fans in other cities.
I think it's kind of BS that the the Steelers get to choose Renegade as their fight song. What say you, John?
That's the one that motivates them. So why is that bad?
Well, I don't understand why they get to have a song by Styx. It's not fair.
Well, I mean, it's they. I guess they can.
It's their song? Come on.
Which song is that, Paul? How does it go?
You know what? Off the top of my head, was it Renegade? I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a
Renegade. Yeah, sing it, John. Come on.
Because remember, it's an old song from a cowboy movie. It's like, you know, so it's like it motivates the fans. They love it. But how do you play that in the opposing team's stadium?
Have pranked them. Someone must have gone into the like stadium box where it is in control of the music and said, "Yeah, this is going to be a great song."
I think it's hilarious, Professor. We always appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
It is Danny and Gallant coming up next. The Seahawks, they do things differently. It's not going to be like looking into a mirror with Baltimore, but they are going to see their reflection. We'll explain what that means next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
And it's coming down from the gallows and I don't have very long.
This is exactly the song that Paul Gallant was thinking of. It was on the tip of his tongue.
I can't believe that Styx forgot the lyrics to the song. It actually goes, Renegade! Rock you like a renegade! I actually confused it with Rock You Like a Hurricane by the Scorpions, for those who couldn't tell.
I believe Scorpions was maybe the first rock concert that I went to.
How about that?
I think so. I'm not entirely sure.
Did they Rock You Like a Hurricane?
I do remember Rock You Like a Hurricane. They came to the Oregon Tech Gymnasium in Klamath Falls, Oregon, when I was just a lad. We'll get into some of my negligible Oregon history coming up. But the Seattle Seahawks they're insistent on playing a style that is, I don't even want to say out of fashion in the NFL, but most teams have shifted to a more pass-centric offense. The Seahawks are determined to have, they say balanced, but it's really a more run-based offense. And it's not going to be a mirror that they look into when they face the Ravens, but this is the team that since Jim Harbaugh left and went back to college, this is the team, the Ravens, who most closely resemble what the Seahawks want to do.
Yeah, and now they are able to do it in a way that might be slightly better than the Seahawks from this standpoint. They are going to run the ball as effectively as one can. Because while I like Russell Wilson's mobility, Lamar Jackson is the most mobile quarterback that we have seen since Michael Vick. I don't think that is a question. He is so fast and I think so slippery as well. And that allows for this Ravens running game, which also features Mark Ingram, who I think is a criminally underrated running back. And it makes it a really difficult attack to stop. And this Seahawks linebacker core, which is very talented, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Michael Kendricks coming off of a big game with the disruption of the pick play that led to the Trey Flowers interception. This is a big game for these guys. Are they going to be able to match with those two? Because those two guys are playmakers and they will wear you out.
If I was Lamar Jackson, I would be very worried about how Baltimore is using me. And I would look down in Carolina at where Cam Newton is right now in his list of injuries, because the difference, and you mentioned it, is Baltimore's insistence on running it. They do use Lamar Jackson differently. Russell has always been designed as part, when he's designed as a part of their running offense, when he's not just scrambling because it's there, it is always designed. Those plays are designed in a way that it doesn't require him to get hit. And that's been the truth, even going back to Tom Cable, because there's a lot of different criticisms you can make of Tom Cable. The one thing that they did, and he would refer to it as the Briar Patch, they didn't run their quarterback into the Briar Patch. They didn't have runs that were designed for him to take them into spaces into the field where he was likely going to get hit. Washington's offense with Robert Griffin III, that was he was going to get hit. And Carolina, I would say, actually didn't care about Cam getting hit and used him as much like a running back as a quarterback. The fact that he's breaking down physically is not surprising when you consider, yes, he is a big dude, but he has taken a ton of hits. If I was Lamar Jackson, I'd look down there and I'd be worried about the way Baltimore is using him.
Is it worth the for the franchise. I'm not talking about for Lamar Jackson, because you're very right on this front. Is it worth it for the Ravens as a franchise to say, you know what, these are the kind of risks that you take when you draft a quarterback like this. Let's see where it takes us, because it did take the Carolina Panthers to a Super Bowl and ultimately a loss that I think they still should have won that game, considering Noodle Manning was under center for that game, not Peyton Manning. There's a different quarterback at that point.
Really? I thought it was neck fused Manning, but you thought the issue was his noodle arm.
Well, I think it's because of his neck, you know,
his fused neck,
nearly headless
spinal
Peyton
condition.
Yes,
yeah. Now, with Lamar Jackson, here would be the answer. I don't know what the upside on Lamar is, because Lamar is not an accurate passer, and I loved Lamar. I love Lamar as a college quarterback. I love watching him in the pros.
Okay, Bill Polian.
Yeah, no, definitely the opposite of Bill Polian, which that remains one of the weirder stands, that probably an example of why Bill isn't running NFL teams.
He's a wide receiver.
Yeah, he's fast, but there's no doubt that he's
got a cannon for an arm. It's just inaccurate. You're right.
If Lamar isn't a runner in the way that he's running the ball right now, if he takes more sort of a discretionary running approach, I would call it, and he doesn't maximize every rushing yard he can get. Because look, to run Russell the way that the Seahawks have ran Russell, you give up yards. There are plays you don't take. There are cuts you don't make. You're conceding yards to be able to prevent your quarterback from getting hit. If Lamar isn't that, I think Lamar is an above average starting quarterback in the NFL right now. For this season, he is one of the more interesting, and I think makes the Ravens one of the more interesting teams. How their offense, how do you defend it? I think it's different to defend the Ravens than pretty much every other team in the league, and that includes the Seahawks. The question, if he's not going to get more accurate, which I don't think he is, I think this is what he is as a passer, is that good enough to be an above average starting quarterback in the NFL? And I'm not sure the answer to that. I think he is an above average starter when you run the way he's running right now. I'm just not sure of the shelf life of that.
They have a good offensive line. I think when it comes to the weapons that are around Lamar Jackson, I think they're going to improve. Mark Andrews is a very good tight end. Marquise Hollywood Brown started the season awesome. He has since come a little bit back to earth. The receiver position, I think, is going to be big for the Ravens in this one. We know that they can run the football. Can they stretch the field? Can they make Seattle play off the line of scrimmage a little bit in this one? And Brown's one of those players that he's listed as questionable going into this game. If he's 100% and doing some of the things that he did week one and week two, yikes. I mean, that he can get behind you. And I think the most terrifying thing that an offense can have when they have someone who is as mobile and elusive as Lamar Jackson, who also has a strong arm, is a guy who can find a way to get past the entire defense the way Brown can. That, I feel like, is the one thing that the Seahawks can't let happen. And they've done a very good job of this the last couple of weeks. They've kept everything in front of them. They haven't been beaten deep.
On the other side of the ball, Baltimore is a team built around its defense. And I would say in that way, they successfully navigated the transition from the Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, and now Terrell Suggs, who's in Arizona, from that defense that was built around those guys to a different defense. They're not as good this year.
No.
But they have a very familiar face at the back end of it. I think it's interesting to hear in cut number 8, John Harbaugh was asked how the safety Earl Thomas, who I'm not sure if anybody knew what his market was going to be, and he didn't end up getting the raise he was asking for from the Seahawks. He still got a $12 million a year salary. He still got a very hefty price at a position where we've seen the bottom kind of fall out of the salaries that were paid there. He's the highest paid safety on the open market this offseason. What has John Harbaugh seen from Earl Thomas so far?
I think he's played well. You know, I think he's getting healthier. You know, he's starting to really feel that he had a broken leg last year, you know, and coming back from that is not something that you really should take lightly. And so I think he gets stronger every week and faster every week and looks good. But he's taken to the whole thing. He's been a leader. He believes in what we're doing and how we're doing it, culture-wise and football-wise. You know, I love being around him. You know, I love his demeanor. I love his desire to be great, you know, and I think it's rubbing off on the guys.
I like him a lot, too. I just don't think he's the same guy anymore, and I don't think he's having the impact that Baltimore thought that he would give them. Because
it's interesting, yeah, because they added him, but they lost CJ Mosley, and right now it's an open discussion. I don't think Baltimore's defense looks better this season. We'll talk about what the loss of Earl Thomas meant for Seattle, also comparing it ahead to Michael Bennett, who's also shown that maybe Seattle, the reasons why Seattle ended up turning the page from him a year earlier. That's all ahead here on Danny and Gallant.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
The Seahawks made a decision to turn the page. And it really came not this past offseason, but the year before. They released Richard Sherman. They traded Michael Bennett. They did not extend Earl Thomas. And at that point, really, Thomas's eventual departure, which happened this past offseason, that's when they made the decision on Earl, was a year ago. And I think you can look at the defense right now, Paul, and you see that is Seattle better off for the decision? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if this defense has turned the page. Here's the one thing I'm very certain of, though. Keeping those guys wouldn't have fixed it. They wouldn't have been better off had they stood pat with those three players.
Well, I mean, there's still competition going on at safety.
Yep.
They would be potentially in a worse cap situation, but Earl Thomas is definitely better than the safety competition that's currently going on right now, no matter what.
Absolutely.
What strides Hendrick Thomas is
making. You're 100% correct. You'd be paying him probably $15 million because if you were going to extend it, you weren't going to be able to get him at the market rate. You were going to have to give him a raise. You'd be probably paying him five times as much as you're paying the rest of your safeties, but you would be getting a better player there. You would be getting better performance.
Most contracts these days in the NFL are three-year deals that are actually two-year deals. And I think that a two-year deal with Earl Thomas, wouldn't you agree that would make you feel a lot better about the back end of the secondary right now, even if Earl Thomas isn't the same player? Say Earl Thomas is above average safety now. Doesn't that make you feel better?
I'm not sure. I really don't know.
It would for me.
What you wouldn't have been able... If you're doing that, I don't think you get Clowney and Ansah. I think you get one of those two. If that's the route that you went and decided to pay Earl Thomas. But it's more than that, because it's also you got to factor in Bennett and Sherman, because there was an attitude element of this, and I think Seattle made a decision that it was better off starting from scratch in some regards than having guys who were going to constantly compare that team's performance to how it had been in 2013. And there was a bit of me that thinks that there was a necessary transition that happened, and it's not that you threw the baby out with the bathwater or the cat out with the bathwater, as it may be, but it was that you were able to actually turn the page to guys who were building something rather than trying to hold on. And when I saw the news that Michael Bennett was suspended for a week, that was immediately what I thought, because of all the different players that they've let go, Bennett might have been the one who remained the most effective. And it's not like he got a ton more money, but he's now on his third team in 3 years. And you begin to see that it's not just a football performance issue. That I think that there were questions about attitude, and it's not that guys weren't pulling or weren't trying hard, but that you had guys who looked at it as the Seahawks' best days are behind them. And I think psychologically, that was a weight that they needed to let go of.
Yeah. Nostalgia can hurt you in life or just on a football field. And I think you made a great point there. Do you really want to have the guys who are the most vocal players in your locker room constantly saying, well, back in the day when we went to a Super Bowl and then we went to another Super Bowl the next year and the coaches didn't get in the way, we'd have two Super Bowl titles.
Look, that's part of it too. That was hanging around. That's absolutely part of this, is the feeling that they were, and certainly Sherman, when he went nuts on the sideline, was speaking directly to that, is that the coaches were the reason we didn't have a dynasty here. The coaches are the reason we don't have back-to-back Super Bowls.
And much like in the El Camino movie, which came out last Friday.
How is that?
It was. I'll give it a solid 89 to 91 out of 100. If you are a fan of Breaking Bad, you will enjoy it. It is a nice, fantastic trip down memory road. Doesn't really give you anything new, but it does give you a little bit more in the story of Jesse Pinkman. And the story of Jesse Pinkman, and I won't give you any spoilers or anything like that, but Jesse Pinkman is basically trying to start his life over and get away from everything and all of the things that Walter White did to him. And there were some great moments with Walter White, you know? I mean, they were the leading meth distributors in all of the southwestern United States.
Be careful. It sounds like you're saying the good old days were when they were slanging meth from coast to coast.
Per Walter White, that probably was the case. Per Jesse, a little bit different, because Jesse actually had, I don't know, morality. Jesse actually had a conscience. Who would have thought? But at certain points, you just need to say to yourself, this is in the past. We're going to move on. So I can understand why they did it. I do think, though, that it
came at the expense of talent on the back end. And having a playmaking kind of safety like Earl Thomas, even if he's an above-average player, that puts the fear of God into any quarterback. If you're Tom Brady or one of the best in the game and you're going up against a secondary that features Earl Thomas, you know you have to think, because at the very least, even if Earl Thomas's skills have deteriorated, you know how smart he is. And you know that he can put himself in the right spot in the right time, where now you have a couple of guys who are trying to figure it out. And to their credit, they have made plays over the last couple of weeks, but are they the same? Whoa, I got to make sure he's not there. I got to make sure he's not there. Because to have a guy like that this week against a Lamar Jackson, a rookie, I feel like that would help out the Seahawks so much, specifically this week, even if he is a ghost, even if he is not necessarily the same guy he used to be.
This is one of the most interesting questions for me when it comes to the question of team building. When you build a great team, how do you try to preserve that greatness? Do you do it by holding on to that core as tight as you can and trying to milk every last drop out of it? And I really think that the Seahawks got to the end of 2017, missed the playoffs, had Richard Sherman, who was coming off of injury, Cam Chancellor, who wasn't going to play, and they said, you know what? It's time to turn the page. And we might take a step back in terms of talent, but it's time for us to turn the page and find the next group of these guys. Be interested to hear, well, we're going to bring in Michael Bumpus to hear if he thinks the Seahawks made the right decision. You can also text in 710-710. It's our Coors Light text line. It is Danny and Gallant, Blue 42 with Michael Bumpus coming up next.